This is John Williams. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch, produced by Pete Zimmerman. We are here until 1, then Anna DeVlantis takes over on WGN Radio. We usually start with an overview, big picture stuff about how stocks and markets are doing. Sometimes we ask John DeJerry and to even pick a stock or a sector that he likes. So let's start there, John. What's your eye on today, big picture? What are you looking at?
Well, there continues to be a lot of optimism about how the economy will reopen, given that we've got the rollout of the vaccine started in the UK, John, with a 90-year-old grandmother,
yeah.
And the fact that the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine here in the U.S., and the same one used over in the UK, by the way, has very strong numbers from young and old, meaning that many vaccines have adverse effects depending on the age of the person getting the vaccine. In this case, they did not note any of that in the 92 pages of the executive write-up for this particular vaccine. So that's extremely positive.
John DeJerian's on a phone line from MarketRebellion.com. Visit MarketRebellion.com for financial news, education. It's a subscription site, too, and you find out things like that, including what's your take right now on this $900-plus billion stimulus bill? In the run-up to our conversation, I said, but there's no stimulus. I guess it is, but there's no promise for a $1,200 payment for individuals, even though there's an unemployment supplement of $300, half what it was last time, right?
Right. And I guess that's been one of the significant sticking points. Also, I guess Leader McConnell wanted some sort of coverage for firms that brought workers back if those workers became ill, that the companies couldn't be sued or something to that effect. I guess I'm using the shorthand version of that, but that's about what it is, John. And I think the bill will likely be between what McConnell has said in the past, which is $500 billion, and the $908 billion that is the bipartisan agreement. I think it'll probably be more in the middle there, probably call it $700 billion. But the sooner they get it, of course, the better. And we'll have to see exactly what the details are once they get to a final version of that bill.
Supplement of $300 a week for people for, I don't see the fixed period of time here. Some of the details are not clear yet how long that would be. I don't know that it's 39 weeks, but say you get an extra $300. Are you comfortable with that number? And I think you are comfortable with the lack of $1,200 one-time payments, right?
Well, me being comfortable is I wish, as you and I have said for weeks and months now, John, that they would have done this right after the other one expired. For a whole host of reasons, that did not happen. So now looking at what we've got, I think they just need to get something out there for the people that are being so negatively impacted by the forced shutting of their businesses. Those would be the first people I'd reach out to with this. And then that $300 will make some difference to individuals, but it really is the businesses themselves, because if the business goes gone, if it's like 161,000 businesses that closed their doors permanently through August, if that continues, and it is likely to continue, that is something that, you know, it'll take us years to recover from, not just weeks or months.
CNBC talked to 20 market strategists, asked them what they think 2021 is going to be like. When asked, I'll just read from their site, what top stocks and sectors investors would bet on for 2021, most replied that they liked inexpensive cyclical stocks. Among the stocks that buy-side analysts identified as shares to buy and hold in 2021 were Mobil, Exxon, Chevron, Boeing, Qualcomm, Visa, and Disney. Overall, there was little mention of tech stocks. What's your overall take on that?
I think tech stocks will continue to do well, John, but There's certainly a return to demand in terms of travel would boost those energy plays that you mentioned already, Exxon and Chevron, as well as, of course, as we get to a vaccine, any of the theme park operators like Six Flags, like Disney, I think those will be some of the best plays in the short term, because I think it'll take a little longer and maybe our habits have changed dramatically as far as international travel and domestic as often as it was happening. I think it might take years to get that back on track. So even though I like the airlines, I think you get more bang for your buck out of some of those other plays, like I say, theme parks, because I think a lot of families will end up driving to those theme parks rather than flying because they can define their own space in their car. And until the vaccine is all the way out, you know, which will probably be to the end of 21, that we have a vast majority of Americans vaccinated, I think you'll see people driving rather than flying in many cases.
John Najarian is the founder of MarketRebellion.com. Okay, John, we'll visit next week. Thanks for your time today.
Thank you, John. Have a great day.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. Ted Rossman joins us from Bankrate.com. He's a Bankrate credit card analyst. Let's talk about credit cards and how we're using them. Hi, Ted. Welcome to the show.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
I would imagine more now than ever credit cards are being used, huh?
You know, that's what we thought would happen. We thought that people would use their cards a ton, debt would be up, delinquencies would be up. Happily, I suppose, that's not the case. We've actually seen credit card debt fall 10% since February, according to the Federal Reserve. Delinquencies are down as well. What's happening is that a lot of people are spending less. They've also made debt payoff a priority, and all the government stimulus programs have really helped, too.
I guess I was thinking, though, that since we're not going into shops where maybe we could use cash, almost all of the transactions must be taking place via plastic, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, debit cards have been the big winner there. A lot of people are very debt-averse. Some people are also having trouble accessing credit, like maybe their credit limit was cut or they were rejected for a credit card. So debit cards are doing well, but you're absolutely right that online shopping is really the name of the game this year. We saw records broken on both Black Friday and Cyber Monday in terms of online sales. We're forecasting 71% of holiday shoppers will make most of their buys online this year. That's up from 51% a year ago.
51 to 7. By the way, I'm surprised that in 2019, then, it was just over half of people say most of their purchases will be made online. Now, three quarters, huh?
That's right, yeah. So it was the majority last year, but now it's the vast majority this time. What's interesting, though, is that overall holiday sales have been down a bit so far this season. That's another surprise. The forecast had been for modest increases. Deloitte had it plus 1% over last year. National Retail Federation was more like 4% above last year. But so far, people are spending less. The NRF found that on Thanksgiving weekend, so Thanksgiving Day through Cyber Monday, overall sales were down 14%. And that really reflects the in-person drop. A lot of estimates of in-person traffic were down about 50% from last year. So even though we broke records on Black Friday and Cyber Monday, at least online, the in-store stuff was down so much. And you know, I think this shows a price-sensitive consumer. Part of the explanation the National Retail Federation gave was, oh, people started earlier. And that was another thing we thought we would see. Half of Americans told us they would start holiday shopping by Halloween. But when the government reported the October sales figures, they were actually pretty disappointing. So what I think we're finding is that people are more price-sensitive. Maybe they're nervous about their jobs or the lack of additional stimulus.
Did I see that you all recommend that I go through a third-party site? If I wanted to buy Nike shoes, don't go to Nike.com, but go to, and I've seen the commercials for this, is it Rakuten, R-A-K-U-T-E-N, and sites like that?
Yes, Rakuten is a good example of that. Credit cards have them, too, like Shop Through Chase is a popular online shopping portal for Chase cardholders. A lot of the big airlines have these, like American Airlines has a good one. We're talking about online shopping portals. as basically a form of affiliate marketing. So what you do is you log into any of these platforms, and then you use their link to Nike or Macy's or wherever you're shopping. They will reward you with some extra cash back or some extra airline miles. And what's really great is that you can stack it with other discounts, like a store coupon code and a rewards credit card. And now that's three ways to save, not just one.
I'm surprised to hear that. It would seem to me like somebody else is making money as a result. But maybe it's volume. If they get enough people under their umbrella, they're able to pass along discounts.
It's viewed as kind of a customer acquisition tool, kind of a marketing expense of sorts. We're actually seeing this also in the buy now, pay later space, which is getting a lot of attention. Companies like Affirm and Afterpay that are teaming up with retailers, often they'll give you a 0% intro period. So maybe it's something like if you pay it off in four installments over the first 6 weeks, there'll be no interest, or sometimes it lasts even longer than that. But I think the common thread here is that retailers are actually happy to pay these kind of acquisition fees because they know that these companies will bring in customers. And there's data that shows that people spend more when they use some of these platforms. So in that sense, you have to spend a little money to make money. From a consumer standpoint, you just have to be careful not to get in over your head.
How long are people stretching out the payments then? Say for Christmas, am I buying more than I can afford and now I'm going to pay the credit charge for a half a year or a year? I mean, is there some metric about that?
That's the fear. On a typical credit card, which charges about 16%, if you make $1,000 of holiday purchases and you only make minimum payments, you'll be in debt for about 3 years and you'll pay almost $300 in interest. The appeal of buy now, pay later, a company like Affirm, is that maybe you can pay it off in those first 6 weeks with no interest. If you can't, though, then the rates can go up substantially, and you could be paying as much as a credit card or even higher. So that's where you have to be careful with something like that. My advice is to avoid this kind of debt for consumer discretionary kind of purchases. You know, it's one thing if you need to do it to put food on the table or a roof over your head. But I actually think that this year, more than ever, we have some grounds to say, you know, hey, maybe we could cut back on the presents this year. Maybe we don't need to buy for everybody, because this holiday debt is really expensive, and that's the last thing we need at the end of what's been a tough year for so many.
Well, I guess it depends on who the we is. There's plenty of businesses out there that would love to see you do just that. I literally wonder what's better overall for the United States of America. Everybody go ahead and have a bountiful Christmas and pay it off later, or everybody save your money because it's a pandemic and the economy is hurting.
Right. I know what you're saying about so much of consumer spending drives the economy, that about two-thirds of GDP is consumer spending. And that's where we come back to stimulus, and we're looking at what happens in Washington, because I really think we've seen a noticeable difference here, that the stimulus programs helped a lot back in the spring. We saw a big snapback in retail sales in May and June. And then ever since then, it's really leveled off. And we've seen the same thing with the employment picture, where we've definitely seen job growth slowing. We've seen, you know, this kind of persistent trend here where I think people are getting nervous. And I think it would be a big confidence boost if there was some additional stimulus sooner rather than later. We have good signs coming with the vaccine, and we think 2021 could be a lot better, but we need to get there first. And I think to bridge that next 3 to 6 months, I think it would be really helpful if there was another stimulus package.
Christmas is 2 weeks and 3 days away. If Congress would come up with something before then, wouldn't that be a shot in the arm? Ted Rossman is Bankrate credit card analyst at bankrate.com. Ted, I'm anxious to talk to you again. Let's visit another day. Thanks for your time today.
I'll look forward to it. Thank you.
Bankrate.com. I understand that it's been busy at some of the tree lots and farms throughout Chicagoland. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. Joining us now is Adam Voren, the Chief Operating Officer and Chief Information Officer at Abbey Farms. Their website's abbeyfarms.com. Hey, Adam, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Pretty good, and thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it.
Shouldn't you be out back cutting down trees right now or doing whatever it is you all do?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I don't mind a little bit of a break. It has been a whirlwind of a year, unlike any in our 70-year history.
Why do you say that?
you know, this year we've experienced, much as I'm sure you've been hearing on the news and whatnot, a very early demand for trees. And I think it's, you know, part of our global pandemic that we're in right now. Everyone's looking for just a little bit of something happy inside their house. But we've had unbelievable early sales that we just have never seen before in our past operations.
Well, they told us that, you know, we go back to tier three, go back indoors, and
yep.
And maybe at a point earlier in time than people would normally buy a Christmas tree. But if we got to go indoors around Christmas time, I presume that was the driving factor, huh?
I think that's part of it, yeah. Everyone was both indoors, so this is mostly an outdoor operation. We do have a store and a bakery and a cafe that we actually moved outdoors this year as well. But really the idea was you can come walk around the farm, you know, that's got quite a bit of space, that you can look for a Christmas tree that brings something happy to focus on. And then, yeah, like you said, it was happening much earlier this year than in years past where you might kind of push it off to this upcoming weekend possibly. This year, that's not the case.
What was your fall like? Were folks out there getting pumpkins and stuff too?
Same thing, yeah. And so this year, you know, we were operating on several different state guidelines to make sure that and we take the safety very, very seriously. And so with that, we had a greatly reduced number of customers that could come through at any one time. But we elongated our season much as we did in Christmas time to allow for more opportunities for less people to come in per day. So you never felt that you were ever crowded or, you know, sanitation has been an incredibly high amount. We were always clean before, but we took it to the next level to make sure that, you know, any high touch points were being hit. And, yeah, a lot of enjoyment outdoors this year, which is a nice thing to see. I wish it was based on a different reason for that. But, yeah, a lot of people going out this year.
On a phone line is Adam Voren from Abbey Farms, abbeyfarms.org. So would you say overall your year is going to be as profitable? You're going to make as much money, keep as many people as you normally would?
You know, the biggest thing that I was focused on this year was survival, much like many businesses, you know, small businesses. You're looking across the board at, you know, escalated costs for cleaning, reduced amount of people you can bring through. My goal was to not have to lay anyone off, and so far we're on track to doing that. And that's the biggest thing, to survive this once, hopefully once in a lifetime, you know, experience that we're all going through right now, and try to make as many people happy as you can, as long as it falls within those safety guidelines.
So is it, these are trees that you're growing on your property there, right?
So it's both. We have about 100 plus acre U-cut where we grow a rotation of trees. It takes a tree 10 to 12 years to grow. So there's a lot of different sizes of trees from a foot tall seedling when they go in the ground up to, you know, 7, 8, 9 foot or so. So there's different portions of the farm that are open for guests that want to have that experience. There's also trees that we bring in from, we're a nonprofit farm for the Marmion Abbey here, and one of the monks' family members has a tree farm up in Michigan, and they have the ability to grow different types of trees that we can't grow here, specifically firs that have become very popular. So we work with them to bring those in. So a little bit of both. So if you don't want to go out in the field and tromp around, chop down your tree, we also have pre-cuts, pre-cuts in the lot here for you to select and take home.
Well, if demand is high and it's, I presume, a somewhat limited crop, I mean, you only plant or plan on harvesting so much. Has
Correct.
The price gone up then per tree this year?
We were able to keep our prices consistent with last year. Back in 2008, there was, of course, the big recession, as we all know. And during that time, there was a cutback in how many trees every grower was planting just due to reduced, you know, ability to do so. And that's also what we're feeling right now. So there's a supply that is, you know, it's becoming a more popular, you know, activity to put a real tree in your house. So it's kind of the best of two storms coming together with more people wanting to do something fun and less available. I want to say less. There's still plenty available, but more people wanting to go in. So it's been a fun opportunity, but we were able to hold our prices the same as last year. It was the least we could do with everyone going through so much right now.
You're doing like bratwurst and apple cider and stuff, or are you not able
you
to
bet.
Do that?
Yeah, so we do, we are able to, we had to change all of our packaging procedures. We're inspected by our local, you know, health authority, and I put together a plan way, way before we opened up to make sure we were not only meeting the guidelines, but exceeding the safety guidelines. And so we were able to still do a form of our cafe that we do old world, like German-inspired family recipes. But that moved outdoors this year, everything in single steel to-go containers, et cetera. So there's very little risk or no risk of contamination or anything along those lines. So still trying to preserve people's memories and traditions of coming here and getting a good meal and then going out and look for a tree. So it's a little different way of doing it this year.
They're on Hart Road in Aurora, Abbey Farms. Okay, well, it's good to hear that everybody's still working, the prices are holding, and there's a good demand, Adam. Keep up the good work out there.
Excellent. We really appreciate it.
AbbeyFarms.org is the website, and they're on Hart Road in Aurora. It's 12:43 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Developers are betting the downtown Chicago housing market will recover from its worst downturn in decades. They're planning major high-rise projects in the West Loop and the South Loop. According to Cranes, the two projects include nearly 1,200 residential units and 314 hotel rooms. One of the developments at 525 South Wabash would include two towers, including one at 36 stories, the other at 23 stories. There'd be a grocery store on site as well. The second development is planned for 640 West Washington and features a 47-story tower. The 2021 Chicago Auto Show is being postponed due to COVID-19. The event was originally scheduled to take place between February 13th and the 21st. Organizers hope the auto show can be held in April or May. Valerie Jarrett is taking over as interim president of the Obama Foundation. She was appointed to lead the foundation after former President Wally Adamayo was nominated by President-elect Biden to be the deputy treasury secretary. Jarrett will remain as president until a permanent replacement is found. She served as a senior advisor to President Obama for all 8 years of his administration. Jarrett has roots on the South Side, where Obama's presidential center is slated for construction. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
All right, Amy Guth joins us again on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Let's talk a little bit about the scorekeeping on Thanksgiving week. And I thought this was interesting. Evidently, folks weren't traveling much. Maybe no big surprise there, huh, Amy?
Yeah, that's right. After a lot of CDC recommendations for people to stay home and just do Thanksgiving with their immediate family and kind of turn to the Zoomsgiving instead of getting together out of an abundance of caution. So it seems that a lot of people did not travel, or at least not as many as in, you know, usually that week. So looking at the numbers, gas sales during Thanksgiving week of 2020 fell 19.3% from the previous year and even fell dramatically the week prior to Thanksgiving. That's the time when a lot of people are kind of getting to their destination. The IHS Market Oil Price Information Service Survey, kind of a mouthful, but they monitor weekly consumption at gas stations around the country, about 25,000 of them. By no means all of them, but that's a big, big swath of them. But their report says that in the U.S., people purchased 185 million gallons less of gas the week of Thanksgiving than they did the week prior. And this is really notable because not only is it kind of a sign of the times that people are not really traveling, but it also is entering a time, kind of this post-holiday slump, when a lot of people tend to not be going out. Gas sales tend historically to drop right around that time, right after the holidays. People are just kind of cold and want to stay home and not do much. So it'll be interesting to see what happens when we look at this in January to see kind of what that Christmas, you know, what's usually kind of a bump right before Christmas of people traveling by car, if that mimics Thanksgiving, it might be a really, really major low for the gas and oil industry.
Are you following how well the infrastructure is going to be able to handle all of the packages that people are delivering?
I am. You know, ever since, I think I've mentioned this on the show before, ever since this summer, there was this big conference of all the people in the shipping and logistics industry. It was kind of their Super Bowl. They had it virtually this year. And ever since that happened, and it was in late summer, talking about how they would coordinate logistics to get a potential vaccine around the world to 7 billion people in a timely way, I've been really fascinated by logistics and shipping and really following it very closely. Of course, this time of year, that's always a story. We're always looking at that this time of year. But about a month ago, FedEx and UPS leadership both kind of came out and said, hey, we need you to get with the program and get your shopping done very, very early this year. Because as people are staying home more, they're shopping in physical stores less, they're buying online more. So that system is already pretty taxed. So I have a number for you that I thought was really astounding to really, that kind of puts it in context. So according to an analysis, we're going to see 7.2 million more packages that need to be shipped this holiday season than the system has the capacity to handle. So it's going to be over by about 7.2 million packages per day this season. That is a really astounding number, 7.2 million a day. And that number came from Ship Matrix, and they they provide a lot of technology for different areas of the shipping industry and follow that really, really closely. And even their leadership, their president said, this is our estimate, but by no means is that going to be all of it, because we've seen kind of unprecedented consumer behavior right now. We can only predict so much. So that's a really big number. And I think it'll be very interesting to see, you know, what is happening with holiday shopping and people that are just doing their daily shopping online right now, on top of the issue of people are going to start looking for how to get vaccines to people as those start to, you know, once those get approval and start shipping.
7.2 million packages a day, more than they had the capacity to handle.
Yeah. Isn't that a stunning number? I mean, that is a lot. 7.2 million per day over the target.
SpaceX is in the news. What's going on there?
Yeah, maybe we can lean on SpaceX to do some of that transportation for us for shopping. But the U.S. government plans to give SpaceX nearly $1 billion. It is $900 million in federal subsidies to deliver broadband to rural locations in the U.S. Anybody who's ever spent time in a rural location can attest it's still very difficult to access broadband internet. And with everything being what it is right now, and with so many people doing commerce online and so much of it based, you know, requiring an internet connection, it's very difficult to not have that. But yet about three of five people say that access to broadband is still a pressing issue and still a problem in rural locations. So SpaceX is going to get almost $900 million. It is one of the biggest subsidies ever handed out by the FCC under this new program specifically to do this, to expand broadband access in the U.S. to different underserved areas. And, you know, we're going to, yeah, I feel like Elon Musk is in the news every day lately, just doing something new. And, you know, SpaceX made a lot of headlines this summer with, you know, sending people to the International Space Station, which was really a game changer for NASA with that partnership. So here's another very big win for SpaceX with that almost $900 million in subsidies. Not really sure of the timeline on that. It will be, you know, fairly quick by space terms, right? You know, like, it won't be like overnight, but it will be, you know, it will be done pretty quickly, all things considered, to expand internet access to rural areas.
Mm. We're out of time. We actually mentioned this earlier, but Boeing is reporting more 737 MAX cancellations. Maybe we'll talk about this another day, but not good news for Boeing, huh?
That's right. Yeah. 88 more cancellations. Some have changed orders, but indeed as Boeing is preparing to get the 737 MAX up in the air, we're still seeing cancellations come through.
Amy Guth on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks, Amy.
Thanks, John.